Welcome everyone. Hello to new faces. Thank you for coming along. So this week we're going to continue on with a theme we've been exploring the last couple of weeks, meditation for beginners. And it doesn't matter if you know you're just coming to this one, you've missed the last couple, because each class is dropping, each class is self-contained, so there's nothing, you know, you've sort of missed. But what we will be doing is carrying on with this theme of mindfulness of breathing, which is what we've been exploring the last couple of weeks, last week. And what we're doing is we're going subtler and subtler with the practice, because it has different functions. There's different ways of practicing mindfulness of breathing. So last week we did mindfulness of breathing focusing on the whole body, to not just the sort of like the abdomen, the lungs, or the sensation of air at the nostrils, but you can actually feel the movement of air, the movement of energy as you breathe all over the body. So that's what we were doing last week. And now this week, we're going to be bringing our focus to our abdomen, to our belly, to where it rises and falls even. And we're gonna go straight into our meditation, but I just want to make a couple of points before we do that. And that is, if you remember from last week, I mentioned that there's three qualities we're trying to cultivate in meditation, and these are relaxation, then stability, and then vividness. So we start off with a level of relaxation, because if we're not relaxed enough, then we become too agitated, too restless, too distracted. So we start off with a foundation of relaxation. That's why we do the whole body approach. That's why we meditate lying down, because that's very relaxing. That's very good for setting the body at ease, setting the mind at ease. Then from there, we cultivate stability. And stability is, you know, how long we can maintain our attention on the object before we become distracted, trying to just sort of get a better quality of attention, a better continuity of attention. And then vividness is the sort of how clear the object is. So the analogy is like a, you know, going from a blurry TV to a very clear picture. So this week's meditation on stability is down in the abdomen. But we're going to add two layers to our meditation, two tools that can help us make sure we maintain our attention. So the very first one comes from the teachings of Padmasambhava when he's teaching shamatha. And he's talking about a different method here. He's not talking about mindfulness of breathing, but it is very helpful. And that is, on the in-breath, we're going to focus in more. So you really, really try to bring that attention, really take notice every time you breathe in, focus very well, focus for the entire duration of the inhalation. Then, when you breathe out, relax, release. So almost like, you know, sort of sighing every time you breathe out. So when you're breathing in and you're focusing in more, you are warding off one side of attentional imbalance, which is the sort of laxity, the falling asleep, the getting a bit dull, because you're focusing in more. And then when you are relaxing on the out-breath, you're warding off all of the agitation, the distraction, the restlessness. So when we are, the main barrier to meditation, people always get one or the other or both. And that is, it's agitation, it's distraction, restlessness, boredom, frustration, all of that side of stuff, which is what we call the excitation, or the other side, the spacing out, not really here, getting dull, falling asleep, or, you know, distracted all the way and then suddenly asleep. So this way of attending, this way of focusing in more as we breathe in, relaxing as we breathe out, is like within each cycle of the respiration, then you're sort of trying to ward the two, you're trying to balance yourself, balance your attention. So that's the first layer, that's what we're gonna start off with. And then the second thing that we're gonna add to help us sort of maintain our attention is counting the breaths. So this is about replacing a lot of wandering thoughts, a lot of distracting thoughts about the shopping list, about what we're gonna eat and all those kinds of things, and trying to replace those with rhythmic counts of the breath. So what we'll do is, there'll be that in-breath where we focus very closely, pay close attention. Then at the very end of that inhalation, we'll just count one. Then release, relax as you breathe out. Allow the breath to flow in again, two. So it's like a punctuation mark at the end of the inhalation. Try not to let it drag through the out-breath. So we're sort of going two, but just try and keep it two, three. Very, very succinct. And then focus as well as you can on those, on the in-breath and the out-breath. And the point of these is we're trying to balance that, this two sides of the attentional imbalance. And it's, the analogy is it's like tuning the strings on a guitar. So if your strings are too tight, then it's very difficult to play. It sounds quite high-pitched. They break, they're very tense. And if the strings are too loose, they're also difficult to play. It doesn't sound good. And so the same is with our level of effort, our level of attention. If we go into meditation with too much effort, you know, all guns blazing, I will focus on the breath, I will not lose my attention for 15 minutes, I will do this, then we get frustrated, we get tense, we get stressed, we get, you know, annoyed with ourselves. And you come out of meditation, you're not more relaxed, you didn't, you know, go anywhere, and you just got yourself more stressed and frustrated. And if we go in with too much of a, you know, relaxed attitude, too lax, then we're just not there. We won't even try. And then it's a very nice 15 minutes of silence, which we don't really give ourselves any, but we don't really get to much of the calm and the peace and the benefits that we get from meditation. So our effort, we're trying to balance, not too much, not too little, and just sort of try and find that balance in the middle. And that's how we cultivate continuity of attention. So this method of the abdomen, the reason that we're bringing our awareness down is because bringing your awareness down is very good for relaxation, but the abdomen is more obvious than the whole body. And the whole body is quite subtle. It's very obvious. So it's very good for relaxation, but not very good for sort of maintaining attention for a long period of time. And so when you bring your focus down, you find that you can relax more. And when you bring your focus up, then you can bring more attention. I was saying that carefully because I wasn't sure I was saying that the right way around. There's this method of changing gears. So when you're in meditation, with our posture, we try and have our chin sort of back a little bit, so give ourselves a double chin, because it helps extend the spine at the back of the neck. And there's a method where if you are quite distracted, then you bring your head down slightly. And if you're getting quite sleepy, you raise your head slightly. It's called changing gears. And you actually find it's very helpful for sort of reducing that distraction, reducing that sleepiness. So if you find in the meditation you are becoming very sleepy, you're probably starting to go this way. So raise the head slightly, make sure your spine is straight. And if you are quite incessantly distracted and your head is up here, then do try and bring it down. Give yourself a double chin. So please find a comfortable position for meditation. For the posture, you can either be lying down if you wish, if you have the means to do so. You'll be completely flat. If you are sitting upright, you want to make sure you have some sort of cushion under you if you can. If not, that's fine, cross-legged, in any way that's comfortable for you. And the main thing is that your back is going to be straight. So just start to get into that comfortable position. If you're on a chair, put your feet flat on the floor. And when you're ready, gently close your eyes. If you wish and it's comfortable for you, you may leave your eyes partially open, vacant in the space in front of you. And we begin our meditation by allowing our awareness to descend into the body, right down to the ground, where we are in contact with the cushion or the floor. And then let your awareness fill the entire space of the body, from the soles of the feet to the top of the head, becoming aware of all the sensations in the body. And that's not about visualizing the body, thinking about the body, but simply witnessing the sensations here. And if you notice any tension, tightness in the body, invite yourself to breathe into those areas. Release that tension. Make sure once again that your back is naturally straight, shoulders level, hands resting comfortably. Head upright with chin tucked in slightly. And so far as you're comfortable, you should find it very possible to remain very still for the duration of this meditation. So to the best of your ability, try not to fidget. Dart the eyes around, but keep as still as possible. And bring your awareness to your face. Let the forehead feel spacious, open, loose. The same between the eyebrows, no contraction. Relax the eyes, the muscles around the eyes. And the jaw. Let your shoulders relax. And settle your body with these three qualities of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. And let your breathing flow naturally. So make sure you're sitting in a way that is not constricting the breath in any way. And take every out-breath as an opportunity to relax more and more in the body. Soften and relax any areas that feel tight. And if we wish, we may round off this initial settling of the body by taking three very slow, deep breaths. for the moment, set the intention to let go of any wandering thoughts or worries about the past, about the future. There's nothing that needs your attention right now. So let your awareness come to rest here in the body. And as you rest here in the present moment, now bring your awareness, direct it downwards to the rise and fall of the abdomen with each in and out breath. And continue to let the breathing flow effortlessly without any intervention on your part. Just let the body breathe. And keep those abdominal muscles loose, relaxed. If you're sitting up, raise the sternum slightly so the abdomen can expand freely. And to overcome dullness, gently arouse your attention with each in-breath. Focus very clearly on these bare tactile sensations as the abdomen expands. And to overcome the excitation, relax deeply with every out-breath, utterly releasing the breath, while remaining gently connected with the sensations of the breath as the abdomen falls back. So we arouse with inhalation, focus with every in-breath, and relax with every out-breath. And to help further calm the obsessively discursive and distracted mind, the involuntary flow of thoughts, we can experiment with counting the breaths. So replacing many wandering thoughts with a few regular thoughts, counting the breaths. So at the very end of the inhalation, just before the exhalation begins, mentally and very briefly, count one. And relax as you breathe out. Maybe even release any other thoughts that have arisen. Focus as you breathe in. And then at the end of that in-breath, very briefly, two. And so on. with the counting, it helps to count 1 to 7, then go back to 1 again. And remain mindful of this balance, that you're trying to bring just enough effort, that you focus well, but that you do remain relaxed. Every time you do become distracted, restless, remind yourself to relax. Just let go of that distraction, that thought train. You don't have to push it away, force it away. You just have to let go, disengage. And just gently return the attention to the breath. You can gently relax your concentration, start to move the body, bring your meditation to an end. I think when we first start out with meditation, it's important to recognize that we have an addiction. You know, we have an addiction to constantly being on the go, to constantly being stimulated, you know, whether it's music or TV or, you know, drink or whatever it is, we're constantly on the go, the mind is constantly being used. And so, the sort of reactions that we get in meditation, the restlessness, the distraction, it's easy to think, you know, that meditation makes the mind more busy. You know, I was fine before I started meditating. Where did all this distraction and turbulence come from? But we're just becoming aware of how busy the mind actually is. and the reactions of the restlessness, the boredom, even the doubt, you know, the why am I doing this? I could be doing something else. And whatever it is for us that comes up, these are withdrawal symptoms because we are going from being very active, organizing, listening, planning, sorting this out, trying to sort that out, you know, a very fast-paced sort of way of using our mind, to just sitting here, observing your belly rise and fall. And that's a very sort of small amount of stimulation. There's, you know, nothing going on. And so we're placing a very active mind and we're asking it to just sit and do nothing and just focus on one thing. And so what does the mind do? You know, the mind is used to moving around all the time and it says, no, I'm not doing that. I'd rather do something else. I'd rather think about that, think about this. It's like giving ice cream, sugar and sweets and all sorts to a child and telling them you're going to take them to Disneyland and then asking them to sit down and be quiet and just focus on one thing. You've got no chance because of the way, you know, that you've hyped it up. So when we meditate, when we try to start a regular meditation practice to get some of the benefits of meditation, a bit more calm in our life, a bit more peace, let go of some of our anxiety, let go of stress, start to get control of the mind, as we start to go down that path, we are sort of going into a bit of rehabilitation. And just like with any addiction, we should expect withdrawal symptoms. You know, that's going to happen. As we start to discover that actually we can be happy, we can be content, we can be fulfilled to just be quiet, to just be. We don't need to have constant noise ongoing to be happy, to be fulfilled, to have enjoyment. That actually we can just be happy just to sit there and watch the breath. Not that you sit there and watch the breath all day long, every day. That's not what it's about. But the simplicity of this practice, you know, that anyone can do it. It's not for a specific worldview. It's not for just certain types of people. Anybody can do this. And that's amazing because as we've been exploring the last couple of weeks, we can't have everything we want. We can't control the external world. Things go wrong and we kind of have no say in it most of the time. And it's exhausting actually to sort of be chasing after, you know, wanting all these things to go right and fearing and rejecting and getting angry at the things that go wrong. Sort of chasing that push and that pull is very tiring. But this simplicity of this practice, barely any stimulation at all. And it might start off with restlessness, it starts off with agitation, but if we can break through the tides of restlessness, the turbulence of the mind, the storms, and get through to that other side, then we start to experience the inner wellspring of a healthy, balanced mind, of genuine well-being. And that is sustainable. That doesn't need, you know, the perfect external circumstances. So then we don't have to sort of obsess with keeping good things, you know, with making sure I have everything perfect, the perfect partner, perfect job, you know, making sure everything goes right, and that I don't have to experience any bad things. We don't have to sort of obsess over that so much because the mind is balanced, because the mind's healthy. We can ride the waves of whatever happens. So you can enjoy a barbecue in the sun. You can enjoy a day at the beach and not be upset if it rains or if the barbecue doesn't light. You can have and truly enjoy the things that are going well in life without sort of being scared of losing it, without having to hold on to it. You know, with that grasping, that clinging, don't leave me, stay, be perfect, and sort of that upset when things go wrong, frustrated or disappointed when things go wrong. And we can be okay with the things when they go bad because we tap into on a daily basis this level of mind which is calm, clear and peaceful. And we start to come to know that when things go wrong, okay, they're impermanent, they're changing, it's not going to be here forever. And it's okay because I have the access to the joy and well-being that I truly, you know, I'm seeking. So this sort of like that peace of mind, that inner well-being, we don't really get that from outside, you know. The first drink and, you know, some stimulants can feel good, but they're a false facsimile, and they don't last, they're not sustainable. You can't always be with that buzz after the first drink. After, you know, you start to lose it and you'll start to fall asleep and become groggy, or you have to drink more. And we both know how both of those go. But this inner well-being, it's always there. It's always ready to be tapped into. That is sustainable. It comes from our own awareness. And it comes from the mind becoming balanced, the mind becoming healthy. And the symptoms of a balanced mind is peace. It is calm. It is an inner serenity, a sense of well-being. And out of that, also bliss and joy. If you ever meet people who do regularly tap into inner well-being, like the Dalai Lama, for example, the kind of joy that they spread and the kind of energy they have just by being near them, you can feel it, you know, that even when things are going wrong, and you know that you think that the Dalai Lama is in exile from his country, and you know many of his people he knows have been in concentration camps, and there's sort of been immense suffering there. But even through all of that, he sheds a tear when he needs to. But you can tell that there's an underlying sort of joy and peace and calm there. And that doesn't come from having good outside circumstances. That just comes from tapping into something more deep. So it's that, you know, symptoms of a balanced mind. And so the Buddha described the effects of mindfulness of breathing, and he described them in four benefits. He said it was peaceful, sublime, an ambrosial dwelling, and that it quells unwholesome states on the spot whenever they arise. And so these four, the peaceful, the calm, I think any of us can sort of get that from even just 10 minutes of meditation, even if we were quite distracted. When you compare it to the rest of our day, sort of when we're a bit turbulent and when things are going, you know, things aren't great, even just 10 minutes of meditation, quite distracted, is more peaceful, it's more calm. But when we have good meditations, a real sense of peace and serenity comes first. Then that sublime. Here he's describing an inner well-being. So like when you really look after the body, when you eat healthily, when you exercise, when you get enough sleep and you just feel really healthy in the body. I don't really know what that's like. I don't really treat my body very well. I don't eat very healthily, but like when you feel really physically well, it's feeling mentally well as well. A sort of genuine well-being from within and a mental well-being. And then the ambrosial dwelling, here he's describing bliss, joy, thrill. And you really wouldn't think by just sitting there sort of watching the abdomen rise and fall, just sat there watching your belly like watching waves on a shore, would bring about joy or bliss or thrills or excitement eventually, but it does. That's sort of been corroborated time and time again, that as you practice more and more, you ever do just feel really joyful and happy from inside and you have no idea why, like nothing's really going like, you know, you haven't had anything that amazing, but you just feel really happy and good inside. That's that experience of bliss. And then that fourth one, the disperses and quells on the spot unwholesome states. There he's referring to when we tap into that kind of mind, thoughts of anxiety, thoughts of worry, thoughts of stress, frustration, they try to come up in the mind. But like sort of throwing a pebble in the air, they can't really get a footing and they come straight back down. Like fish swimming against a really strong current, they try and they try to get their way in. But the current of the mind is so strong that they can't really stay, they have no staying power. And so we don't have to take anyone's word for it, you know, as the Buddha says, you don't have to take his word just because he said it or just because it's in a book. We can experience that for ourselves. Just with a regular meditation practice, we can start to tap into that. And also in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, he says that by practicing mindfulness, we eliminate attachment and disappointment towards the world. And so this is, you know, when you have access to that wellspring inside, when things do go wrong, when we don't get what we want, when we have to experience what we don't like, there's no disappointment, there's no disturbance of mind. Because we know to have that confidence, I have what I need within. So I wanted this evening to offer a simple practice for overcoming kind of miserliness when we're feeling quite low, quite sad about ourselves, our situation, you know, kind of a bit stuck, feeling quite self-oriented, but quite low. And so ordinarily, for many, we go about our day, you know, going from home to the park or to work or to the shop. And our head can be filled with kind of like these micro judgments, you know, as we see other people, as we see other things. We're social creatures, so we're quite critical and quite judgmental of what we see. So, you know, you see somebody sort of throwing a cigarette and, you know, these thoughts arise of, you know, calling them whatever or thinking whatever of them. You might see, you know, teenagers hanging about and you think of, you know, they need to get their life sorted and I blame the parents and, you know, all sorts of things can come up. You see someone spitting on the floor or see someone wearing something weird or whatever. There's sort of these micro judgments that happen naturally as we witness and label the world around us. I saw a woman back when I was in lockdown, when we went for a walk, and she was wearing a matching purple spotty coat. It was matching with her dog. They both had the same coat on. And she looked like quite, she you know, looked quite happy, quite confident as she was walking. And then she saw this group of teenagers and she kind of put her head down and she, you could see her sort of like avoiding that way and going a different way. Probably because she was, you know, didn't want to have that kind of judgment or them to say anything. And so as many of us go about our day and we scan our environment, we see things, we witness things, we label them and we judge them. Whether we judge them as, you know, that's bad, I'm sort of, there's a bit of like the ego kind of goes, well, I'm a bit superior, I'm better to that. Or we see somebody having something good and we think, I want that, why do they get that? I would love to have that car, I'd love to have that house. Sort of, you know, some sort of judgment like this. And they are very natural because we are social creatures and it's instinct, but a lot of these can be harmful and we don't actually realize it. And they start to build a bigger mood, a bigger picture. And so our ego is being groomed, you know, it's feeling sort of superior, better, different, separate. There's a greater focus on what I have and haven't got and what other people are doing and not doing. And if we constantly see the bad in others, whether at work or out and about, we're training the mind to find the bad out there. And so we start to shape our reality this way. We create an ugly picture of our environment, of our work, of our neighborhood. You know, if we focus on there's riots here, or there's these people are doing this bad thing, or these people are doing that bad thing, and that's what we focus on all the time, then we start to create a really sort of negative picture of the world that we live in and the people we live around. And with a keen eye for finding the bad, we start to be quite self-critical as well. And so by doing that, you start to suck the positive energy out of your day, the mind. You're not so fun to be around either. You know, positive people put out positive energy and you love being around them. We all know somebody who is just like really overly critical and sort of complains all the time, and you don't want to be around them. It's just not very fun. But it's habit, and it's very easy to actually not know that we do it. And so you might think, you know, I don't think I do that too often. But next time you're out walking or going to the shops or whatever, it's a good idea to just observe the mind, see what does come up, see what sort of thoughts do come up, and see actually if we could change them. So this way of sort of bringing ourselves out of a low mood or miserliness is the third of the four immeasurables, the practices for opening the heart. And it's mudita, which is translated as empathetic joy. Or rejoicing. And very simply, it's just the act of rejoicing in the happiness, the virtues, and the well-beings of others. And it's a really amazing way to just transform our day. It's really easy. It's been a favorite practice of mine for a long time. And it's so straightforward you wouldn't think it was a practice. And it's just that you see the happiness of others. You see the joy, you see the lightness, the good cheer, you know, their confidence, their desire to do just what makes them happy. And you witness that joy, you share in it, and you enjoy seeing other people happy. And so we do this already with our loved ones, you know. We enjoy seeing our loved ones happy. We enjoy seeing our partner nerd out over their favorite hobby. We love seeing kittens play and dogs play. And, you know, all of that really comes naturally. And it makes us smile. But not so much always with other people. So there's two ways that we can go about our day. One way is to be sort of quite miserly, noticing all the negative stuff, judging people, feeling a bit superior, or feeling jealous of what they've got and we haven't. Or we can have the exact same day outwardly, same exact circumstances come into the exact same people, and instead notice all of the good. So when you're at the shop and there are people in the corridor and they've stopped with their trolleys and they're chatting to each other and they're in the way of everybody, normally it's, what are you doing here? Don't you know there's other people in the shop? Get out of the way. You know, you're sort of like just straight away, straight to the, I need to get to somewhere and you're in my way. Instead, we could notice the joy in their faces, catching up with someone that perhaps they haven't seen in a while. See that they're enjoying themselves, seeing that they're enjoying their conversation, and instead take delight in that. On a walk, we could watch the excited dogs, we could see the happy kids playing about, share in their joy, smile at that, see the good that's out there. When we see a couple, like a young couple showing affection and kind of being, you know, all over each other, and there's a lot of kindness and warmth and everything there. For a lot of people, it's like, oh, get a room, or, you know, what are you doing that out in public for? Or you're just like, you know, take that somewhere else. But instead, we could remember what it is like to be in a new relationship, to be that sort of like in love, the best thing in the world, nothing's ever going to go wrong, you know, and just remember what that's like and just enjoy and see that, you know, the happiness and the joy in their faces, and rejoice in that, take delight in that. Seeing that woman with her outrageous coat, matching coat with her dog, and instead of, you know, being judgmental or think how outrageous, you know, she is, or instead just thinking, isn't it so nice to see someone with that confidence? You know, she must have been so excited when she saw that coat online, like these matching coats. And just be like, isn't it amazing that she just feels so confident to do that? I wish I had that confidence. That's so lovely to see. And just take delight instead in that thing you see. And so we pretty much, we 180 degree our perspective. You know, we start seeing the good that's out there, and there is so much. Because there is so much of a negative bias nowadays, especially, you know, with social media and the news. It's all negativity. Look who's doing this, look who's doing that. I had to unfollow pretty much all of the news sites on social media because the titles, and they're just trying to get a reaction. They're just trying to get you to read more, be shocked, be surprised. And the comments, you know, that people leave, it's, if that's how we spend our time, then there's this quote from William James that what we attend to for the moment is our reality. And that, you know, if we do attend to a reality that is very negative, there's always something going wrong, there's always this to be angry about, that to be upset with, then that's the reality we live. But if we bring more balance, if we see that there is good out there is kindness out there, and we bring more focus to that, then that's the reality we start to inhabit. And it's also about the more impactful people rejoicing. The classic mudita is more about the virtues of people in the world. So think about those more impactful people in our life, our heroes, those who inspire us with their good virtues, their good qualities, the people who are out there in the world trying to make the world a better place, that they're always serving others, trying to make other people's lives easier. They're, you know, people who are helping the environment, helping other living beings. Those really inspiring people who are just so selfless and feeling joy that they're in the world and they are doing what they do. And that, you know, just, wow, I rejoice in their activities, take delight in what they do, their presence in the world. And that can help us sort of, it can help inspire us to do that as well, you know, to be that light in the world, to be that inspiring person that, with that positive energy, rather than the person who sucks the energy out of the room. So I think that we should make it our job to transform our life, you know, to seek out the kindness, the happiness, the joy that's in the world, because there is so much. Attend to it, savor it, enjoy it, and see how it changes our reality. You know, it doesn't cost anything to do this practice, so give it a go. Give it, you know, 24 hours, or just decide you're going to go on a walk and you're going to see all the positive things that there are out there, and you're just going to enjoy it. And see it for yourself, and it really does. Just even just thinking about it, you know, you don't even have to go out for a walk. You can just imagine it, and you can just enjoy it just by doing that. And so just to mention this like, deliberate shift of our attention is not to sort of ignore and pretend like there is nothing negative going on in the world, because there is, of course, but it's to bring more balance to it, because we have a negative bias. The human mind is designed for survival. The human brain is designed for survival. So it's like, it's kind of very worthwhile to notice the negative, because it's going to affect, you know, whether you're going to get eaten or not. But that's not much of a problem anymore. So we don't really need to like be focusing on so much of the negative, but our mind still does anyway, because it's habit. So it's about bringing a bit more balance, and that helps overcome that sort of low mood, miserly way that we can find ourselves stuck in sometimes. So that's the practice I wanted to share for this week. And we do have some time now for our discussion, for any questions, if anybody wants to share anything about their week or their meditation practice or the meditation we just did. Thank you, everyone, for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.